Today on The Grave Talks, the history and the hauntings of the Crescent Sanatorium and Prison. In 1900, there were 34 sanitariums in the United States. By 1925, there were 536. The Crescent Sanatorium was one of the earlier sanatoriums at the time of heightened health concerns and the spread of tuberculosis. The Crescent Sanatorium was located in the mountains near the present-day town of Crescent, Pennsylvania. Over the years, Crescent Sanatorium not only served as a tuberculosis hospital, but was also a mental hospital and a state prison. And some people who were there at one time never left. The complex is haunted by spirits from each of its different lives. I'm Carol Hughes, and on this episode of The Grave Talks, we talk about the Crescent Sanatorium and Prison with Lindsay Rogers, one of the lead paranormal investigators leading the public overnight paranormal investigations. And Lindsay, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm very excited to dive into talking about the Crescent Sanatorium and Prison, not only the history of it and the hauntings of it as well. Let's start with just what the heck it is, because it's massive, and I was looking at pictures of it. I can't even really wrap my brain around this. So can you kind of tell us a little bit about the space, how many buildings are on the property, just a little about it?
So the space is 34 acres, and there's 22 buildings. Out of the 22 buildings, 17 of them are explorable. So when they do daytime tours, you're allowed into 17 of the buildings, and the same thing with the paranormal overnights.
Now, that's quite a few of the buildings, actually. That kind of surprises me.
Absolutely. Yeah. The only building that kind of is an issue right now is a building that we call Building F. It needs some roof repair, so you're allowed in the sun porch area on the second floor and the main foyer area on the first floor, but that is in the process of getting fixed, so we're hoping by the end of summer that it will be completely opened up.
Now, today we're going to dive into some of the paranormal things, obviously, that happen there on a regular basis.
Yes.
But let's start with the history of it. This goes back to 1911.
Yeah, 1911. Andrew Carnegie originally purchased it to build a summer home for his mother. Unfortunately, she fell ill and passed away before he got a chance to build anything. So he decided that he would donate it to the state for $1 if they promised to build a tuberculosis sanatorium. So they started construction, and they first started accepting patients in 1913 to treat tuberculosis.
And at that time, you know, tuberculosis was pretty rampant. Mm-hmm. And the idea was kind of to get them out of the urban populated areas and get them some fresh air, some sunshine. That was kind of, in fact, for a lot of different disease back then. They didn't have what we have today, obviously.
Yeah, they didn't have a cure at the time, and it was sort of isolate, kind of like we did with COVID. Try to keep them away from the general population to prevent the spread of it. But then they also believed that that fresh mountain air, especially, it's located on top of Crescent Summit, so the elevation is quite high, felt that that fresh mountain air would cure tuberculosis.
So when they started building it, did they start in 1911?
Construction would have started in 1911. The administration building and one of the wings, I think, was open in 1913, where they started accepting patients in at first. And I believe I even read that they were allowing some patients to be brought in and kind of kept them in the kitchen area at first, until they got the wings expanded. I don't think the wings were fully finished until 1916.
Which really, when you think about how big and massive this is, and I know they added on some things, I'm assuming, later.
Absolutely.
But to even be able to start building in 1911 and within 2 years be able to get some patients in there, that's in the middle of nowhere, no less. It's not even like today where you could transport things easier.
I can't imagine, especially because it seems like a long drive from off the main road to drive back in there. I just can't imagine bringing supplies in and out. And they didn't stop with that building. I mean, there was the main building, and then they built several other buildings as the years went on because it just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Now, as far as treating tuberculosis, because in the beginning it was known as the Crescent Sanatorium.
Mm-hmm, correct.
So that was primarily to treat tuberculosis. How long did they do that? How many patients did they see over the years? It was a lot.
Oh, the number is a lot. I believe it was over 40,000 that they treated.
I can't even wrap my brain around that. So was it until, how do you have any idea the length of time they were treating tuberculosis patients?
They did it until 1956.
Okay.
Because the treatment for TB did come out in the 1950s. And so they started seeing less and less tuberculosis patients, and it kind of became a slow transition with receiving more patients that were mentally ill. And so then they kind of transitioned the name to Lawrence Flick State Hospital in 1956. And it operated as a state hospital until the 1980s.
Then what's crazy is that still wasn't the last of the transformations of this building, because after that, then the prison part came into play.
Yeah, then the prison stepped in and they started construction, well, sort of deconstruction, because they tore the wings off of the main sanatorium building, and they left the administration building and the kitchen, and they kind of left a couple of the other outer buildings. And then with that, they built some newer cell blocks, and they turned it into what we now refer to as SCI Crescent.
So all in one location, you've got parts of what was a sanatorium, I'm assuming anyway, parts of what was a sanatorium, part was a mental hospital, and part is a prison.
Correct.
And does it kind of look like that today? You can see
Absolutely.
The different things?
Absolutely. Some of the buildings you walk in, like the ones that were built in the 1880s, you walk in, you know, this was definitely a jail. But if you walk into some of the older buildings from the outside, a lot of the buildings have a Tudor style look, and they're gorgeous, especially the Maple Schoolhouse, which was originally built for the children that had TB. It's one of our most beautiful buildings. And it doesn't look like a prison at all. Even when you go inside, there's no jail cells in there. The administration building as well, it's beautiful. When you first walk in, though, there is a couple, you start to see some bars. So you could tell that, okay, this must have been a beautiful hospital, but now I can see the transition where it turned into a jail.
I would imagine there were treatments at those times that we wouldn't use today.
I would imagine so.
So there was probably some interesting history. It's not like everybody went in for tuberculosis and they got their sunshine and their fresh air and they went back home. You know, it Correct. Wasn't always like that. And same with mental illness.
Correct. We do have a building on property called Building 7. And it was originally built as a surgery building for tuberculosis. I don't have the exact documentation as to what surgeries were performed at Crescent, but I could tell you from other tuberculosis hospitals, the type of surgeries that they would have performed back in those days would be to deflate the lungs and then reflate them, like deflate them one at a time and give them a break and then reflate them, or try to remove some ribs to allow some room. So I would imagine that those types of surgeries were performed.
Now, I read a couple different places that the number of people who died there from tuberculosis is staggering. It was in fact, tens of thousands.
Absolutely. Yeah. I don't have the exact number in front of me, but I know it's an astronomical amount. And unfortunately, in back in those days, there was no cure for TB. It was almost like getting a death sentence. So the number doesn't surprise me.
Because I read one place 30,000. I read another place 40,000. So I don't know which is true, but let's just say it was a lot.
Yeah, there's some conflicting information, and I don't want to give a number away that's not accurate to my knowledge. There's different places I've read different numbers, but I know that the number is high.
And just like with so many facilities of that time, you know, it's not like things were kept on a computer. There wasn't a hard drive anywhere. This is all paper documentation, and a lot of that gets lost along the way. And I do think you've kept quite a you've found some of that documentation.
There's a lot of documentation. I myself have not read through it. I know that some other people have told me that they've read through some of it. Even as far as like nurses' notes, where when the hospital first opened, there was positivity. There was, the nurses were coming in with a good positive attitude, like, we're going to cure this. What we're doing is a good job. We're doing a good thing. And then they kind of said that the notes toward the end tapered off to being short-staffed, being frustrated, seeing deaths, feeling negative. So it's amazing that that documentation is still around for people to read.
You know, you mentioned COVID a little bit ago, and what you just said reminded me of COVID.
Absolutely. And that's what and it's amazing to me because COVID happened before I had a chance to explore Crescent. And it was interesting because when I started researching Crescent more and more, it just reminded me so much of COVID.
Right. Because there's no cure. We didn't really know what we were doing. We've got this. We're all in this together. And that fell apart. What seems like now, looking back, pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But at that time, because the tuberculosis, that went on for years.
It really did. It went on for a long time until they found the cure.
Now, when it became a prison years and years later, it was a prison until
2013.
Relatively recently. And It housed some pretty serious inmates. Like there were some serial killers there.
Yes. The two that are most infamous is Joseph Callinger. He was housed there and he did die there. And then John DuPont was housed there, but he was later removed to SCI Somerset, where he passed away.
So when you think about that, because then they built a new prison, so then they had to transfer all those prisoners over?
What's sad to me is some of the reports about how much abuse took place with the correction officers that were there toward the end, which resulted in a pretty big lawsuit for the state. And so I think about not only all the prisoners that got transferred, but all the correction officers that got transferred for their jobs as well.
Wow. And I read somewhere where it happened pretty abruptly, too. It was like, okay, we're closing it.
What's sad about that is how the correction officers found out was by watching the news.
I know. Can you believe that?
And some of the inmates saw it on the news before the correction officers did. And then they were telling the correction officers. And and it was to the point where one correction officer was so mad when he found out, he fired one of his guns in the, what we now know as the visitor center. And there's bullet holes in one of the glasses in the visitor.
Oh my goodness.
And we thought it was vandals. And we had a prior employee come in to tour the place. And they said, they named the employee and they said it was this employee. And he was mad that he was losing his job and he fired his weapon.
I did see online where you've had some events like recently where former employees came back, kind of reunions.
Yes.
Which I wouldn't have even thought about that, but it makes sense. And because they can come back.
Absolutely. I'm so sad that I missed it. I was not able to be there that day that it was happening, but I love the idea of it because I can't get enough of it. If I come across somebody who has worked there, it doesn't matter whether it was the prison or whether it was the Lawrence Flick Hospital, like I'm like, give me as much information as you can. Like I want to learn as much as I can about it.
Do you find that getting that historical information, you know, even for example, what you just shared about the bullet holes and how they happen, does that help you with your investigations?
It absolutely does. It absolutely does. It impacts how we investigate the types of questions that we ask. Sometimes, depending on the type of activity that we get, we might know the answers to it already. It definitely helps. So the more knowledge, the better in our eyes.
Once the prison closed down, I'm assuming it just sat there empty for quite a while.
So they did keep it maintained for 3 years after it shut down, just kind of maintaining the boilers and things like that. And then it finally became abandoned in 2019 or 2016.
So, and then it reopened again to the public.
Bakehouse Produce purchased it in 2019.
Oh, well, let's talk about that real quick, because that's interesting, because she really did say Big House Produce.
Uh-huh.
So there is an agricultural company. Is it agriculture? Because there's some farming.
Hydroponics farming. They bought it to farm. They had no idea what they were getting themselves into with the tours that's going on and the paranormal that's going on. They strictly bought it to farm.
And then the idea was just leave the buildings in disrepair. They'll eventually come down or something.
I think that they had other plans for them. I know they purchased it in 2019. I know that I met the owners and visited the place in early 2021 because I had reached out to them as soon as I found out who owned it. And I was like, hey, will you let me investigate it? It has to be haunted. So they said to me, we don't even know how to charge for that. And I said, you know, I've been doing this for 10 years. Let me come up. Let me look at the property. I could tell you maybe, you know, what to charge based on other places I've gone that's a similar size. And they showed me the map of the place. And I think they had other plans, such as putting in a bed and breakfast and other venues and stuff. I don't think the plan was to ever let the buildings go in disrepair. I just think that they had other plans for them.
What kind of background do you have that leads you into, because it's like, it's such a massive facility to make you be like, I want to investigate there.
So I've been a paranormal investigator for over 10 years. I'll travel anywhere to a haunted location. So I've been doing that for a long time, and I'm always looking for new places to investigate. And I always knew when SCI Crescent closed down, I had heard that it had been a tuberculosis sanatorium, but the state had owned it and they weren't letting anybody into it. And the only people I knew that were getting in were sneaking in and getting in trouble. And I didn't want to do that. And so I sat and waited patiently until somebody bought it that I could reach out to and ask for permission.
Just because I'm always curious, do you have some kind of experience in your background? Maybe when you were younger, there was a paranormal experience that just kind of drew you to doing investigations?
Yeah, absolutely. I grew up in a house. My parents moved into a house when I was 6 years old and started getting all kinds of activity. It started with nightmares, me insisting that there was somebody walking down the hallway or in the hallway staring at me. And then it moved to you could hear footsteps, doors being open and closed. We had furniture that moved, pictures that fell off walls, quite a few different things that happened in that house. And I lived there from the time I was six until I was about 19. And so living in that, I think the older that I got, you know, initially I was scared, but then the older that I got, the more intrigued that I got. And then I wanted answers. I wanted to know what it was. And then I spent a lot of time like researching books, watching TV shows. And then eventually I joined a paranormal team and started investigating.
I always think that's interesting because I also grew up in a haunted house and I'm kind of drawn to it, but I can't bring myself to take that leap into investigating it. But I'll talk about it all day.
Yeah.
but the investigating, hats off to you, because I get why you do it, because it is something that you're very drawn to once you live with it.
Yep, absolutely.
Now, when you take a look at the place, now I've only done it through photographs, but when you just look at it, you know, it's a haunted prison, it's a haunted hospital, it's a haunted mental hospital all in one.
Yep.
So you can't look at it and not think, man, that place is haunted.
Absolutely. With a history like that, why would it not be haunted?
And it's got just so many different things that have happened. So I'm not even sure where to start when we start talking about the paranormal there. What would be a good place to start? Because there's many.
The best way to describe it is there's such a big array of spirits that are there. There's good and bad. There are days that you go there to visit and the whole place feels light and airy and you feel like you're communicating with, you know, friendly people. And then the next time you go, something's a little more menacing and doesn't want you to bother them and then tries to scare you off. It's kind of like Jekyll and Hyde.
And with there being so many different places on the grounds to investigate, it would even feel like they're different wherever you go, I would imagine.
They are, but the buildings themselves kind of take on different feels depending on the day. For example, the chapel. There's a chapel on the property, and most people look at chapels and they say, oh, chapel, you know, place of God, that's a safe place to be. And there are days that the chapel feels like that, but then there are days that the chapel makes you want to run out and not come back.
Isn't that interesting?
It's very interesting. It's very interesting.
Because you're right. You would think a chapel, that's a safe place. It would be a more loving feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you think too, over the years, you don't know what's even happened in there.
Really don't. And I mean, I think that's where you could investigate that place 100 times. And I still don't think that you're going to get the full answers that you want because, you know, I'm up there, you know, a couple weekends a month, bringing, you know, the public in and investigating with them. And we keep asking questions and it's going to take us a long time to find the answers if we ever find the answers.
Let's start with the tunnels, because I think it's creepy. When I saw the photos, just looking at the photos, several of the things I've seen just gave me kind of goosebumps, but the tunnels especially. So were they an original part of the building?
They were original part of the sanatorium. And they used to be a lot bigger. But unfortunately, when the prison came in and tore down the wings off the hospital, we did kind of lose our tunnel system that would have went from the bigger sanatorium over to the surgery center. So those tunnels are non-existent. So the only tunnel system that we have right now is a tunnel system that goes from our schoolhouse to the chapel. There's an entrance to our building F, and then it goes up to the administrative building.
What were the tunnels used for?
Initially for transportation, however you see that, whether it be food supplies, employees. I would imagine, I don't have documentation on this, but I would imagine when the tunnels were open from the main building to surgery, I would imagine that they probably would have transported bodies through there when they passed away because the morgue was held in the surgery center.
There would have to be a lot of people buried on or near there.
There is. We do have a cemetery that's off site. I don't know the exact number that's on the cemetery.
Because, you know, a lot of people, they went there because they had tuberculosis, never left. They went there because they had mental illness, never left. Same with the prisoners.
Right.
And some of them didn't, I would assume, especially with the tuberculosis. And some of them, I would assume, with mental illness, too, and the prison. You know, their families are gone, or maybe their families are estranged.
Mm-hmm.
So they wouldn't come pick them up.
I was told by a prior employee that when it went to shut down, there was a couple ashes that were left in the chapel from inmates who had passed away and had been cremated. And she had said to me, are they still there? Because the state definitely did not take them when we closed down. And I can tell you, I've never found ashes there. So somebody has found those ashes and I don't know what they did with them.
Which could be a little bit of why there's sometimes a menacing feeling there.
Absolutely.
What are some of the things that happen in the tunnels? Because I've definitely heard there's activity.
So the tunnels, I've got a lot of sort of like residual stuff where you almost hear other people having a conversation and you're not really a part of it. It doesn't really answer back sometimes. There has been, I've heard footsteps almost sounding like it's something's going to run up on you. Heard knocking on the pipes. And just recently we had a group of people that were there with the SLS cameras and they caught two things crawling on the ceiling. The SLS mapped out two things crawling on the ceiling.
Is that one of the places that has a different feeling day to day, or it seems like it would be kind of just dark?
The tunnels always seem scary to me. And okay. I don't know if it's just because even in the broad daylight, you can't see your hand in front of your face.
Right.
You cannot walk those tunnels without a flashlight in broad daylight. So it's always dark in them all the time. So to me, they always seem scary. They never feel light and airy to me, ever.
And the public can go in the tunnels, or is that kind of?
Absolutely, they can go in the tunnels.
Ooh, I don't know if I could. I'd be like, Lindsay, I know we're halfway through, but I got to get out of here.
Yeah.
Let's see some of the other more original buildings. There's one that's called End of Life Building. That just to me sounds deeply scary and dark.
So I think the building that you're referring to is Building F. And I think there was some miscommunication. Somehow somebody got on a kick with calling it End of Life. And there's actually no documentation that Building F was ever End of Life.
Oh, okay.
Not sure how that got started. The true end of life would have been the medical building, which we refer to as Building 4. It was the hospital. So if you were dying, that's where you would have died. But Building F definitely is the most active building on property, even though it's not referred to as end of life.
And that wraps up part one of our conversation with one of the lead paranormal investigators at the Crescent Sanatorium and Prison. Make sure you listen to part two when we discuss the very dark entity in Building F. For more information, you can visit their Facebook page or go to crescentsanatorium.com. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advanced episodes, everything commercial free, become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts and you can try it 3 days free. You can also go to patreon.com/thegravetalks and find everything there, also all ad-free. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us at The Grave Talks, thank you for listening.